This is Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, Senior Editor at Yes Media. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Harvard University and the California Institute of Technology last week announced they would return to requiring SAT and ACT test scores as part of their admissions processes. Starting before the COVID-19 pandemic, universities had begun to drop test requirements. The pandemic lockdowns accelerated the trend, and soon thousands of institutions had become test-free or test-optional, including all University of California schools. Now, some elite schools, such as Harvard and Caltech, are backtracking in spite of decades of research showing the SAT is biased against women, people of color, and low-income applicants. My guest is Harry Fetter, Executive Director of Fair Test, the National Center for Fair and Open Testing. He's also a former New York City public school teacher and former litigator. Welcome to the program, Harry.
Thanks, Sonali. Great to be here.
So first, let's talk about the fact that there has been this body of research for decades, as I mentioned, showing that the SAT is deeply, deeply biased. There's also lots of information out there on the internet about the very racist origins of the SAT. And yet schools for so long clung to this test, you know, and they did so, I guess, out of a way to say that, well, there has to be one single standard. Why do you think this test lasted for so long? And, you know, I guess that'll help us understand why it continues to last in some schools.
Well, do you want the nice answer or do you want the cynical answer?
No, I want the real answer. I want the truth.
Well, look, the as you said in your intro, the tests have racism and classism baked into them. And all you need to know to prove that is just look at the College Board's and the ACT's data, which show the performance based on family income and wealth and based on race and disadvantaged minorities and, as you said, lower class students just don't perform as well. And, you know, so you ask why. I think that there's lots of reasons. There is bias baked into the test. There's also the schools and the school systems and the cultures around how from, you know, first grade through 12th grade, certain schools and school systems sort of feed in to this track of quote unquote elite education. And that is an exclusionary track. And, you know, if a system is working for the people who run it and for the people who came through it, there is very little incentive to change that system. So I would suggest that the reason that they stuck with it is, as you said, it seems to provide an objective measure because everyone takes the same test under sort of identical, pretty much identical conditions. But what that test doesn't do, and not to sort of get deep into psychometrics here, but what it doesn't do is sort of give you a reliable indication of the individual talents of any particular student. And since the test is designed and gives the impact and the result that we've indicated, it by virtue of it, the sort of statistical results, you are going to kind of perpetuate who winds up attending Dartmouth and Harvard and Yale. Right. And I think that that's kind of the de facto way it was done. It's also, frankly, for the college admissions offices, it's the cheapest and easiest thing to do. They basically farmed out their process to these, quasi-public outfits, which are really private companies, the College Board and the ACT. And they say, we will, you know, you have this test that is it's norm referenced, so only a small slice of kids can actually do well. It's not a criterion reference test. It's not saying, let's see who meets a certain standard. And, you know, the fact that it gets people complain is like, oh, SAT scores are up, SAT scores are down. The fact of the matter is only a certain percentage of kids are going to get above a 1400 on the SAT. And that percentage is skewed by race and class. So I think it's what we see is kind of a self-perpetuation of the power structure. And this test has been a very good tool for that.
Now, what was it that led to universities beginning to drop the SAT? Mm-hmm. I mentioned that this sort of started before the pandemic. Yeah. And then during the pandemic, it accelerated, perhaps for practical reasons, because, of course, it became hard for, you know, during the lockdowns, right at the time when students would be applying or getting ready to apply. There was about a year and a half of lockdowns in various parts of the country, and they couldn't go personally to testing centers. So what was it that started this trend? You know, we know what accelerated, but what started it?
Well, I think there were some universities and university admissions offices that saw that they were not attracting a diverse pool of candidates. They also saw that when they sort of looked at the test, they realized that what the test was giving them was not necessarily what they wanted in a student. It's a very narrow measure of knowledge and skill. So there are plenty of smart people, and I use that word broadly, plenty of intelligent people, plenty of highly talented people who just don't do well on these particular instruments. And so I think there was a move at, you know, there were some liberal arts colleges like Bowdoin, some other places like Wake Forest, and eventually, you know, I would say sort of the top ranked academic school to go test optional before the pandemic was University of Chicago. And I think there's just a realization that these tests are bad measures. They're discriminatory. They sort of put a thumb on the scale of a holistic process when a university is trying to produce, you know, to take in an incoming class that is not only reflective more of the general population of the United States or regionally or locally, but also has a diverse array of talents and, you know, sort of fast processing math problems is not necessarily what we want an entire student body to be their, you know, their calling card.
So they realized that this was happening. And at the same time, I understand that there was this lawsuit by the Compton Unified School District, particularly against the University of California system and the UC
right.
systems. That's yes. an interesting aspect of the story, right? Tell me about this lawsuit and what happened.
Well, I think, you know, this is a California thing, and I'm not sort of, I haven't read the papers or anything from the, but the lawsuit essentially prompted the UC SIMP system to look at the test because on its face, the test had discriminatory impact for admissions. Also coupled with the, you know, California constitutionally under its, or it was a ballot initiative, had gotten rid of affirmative action before the United States Supreme Court did. And I think that there was a realization in the California state system that the numbers of low-income and racial minority students who were getting into or being admitted into the, particularly the top tier of the UC system, the numbers were getting smaller. And as the population of California diversified, that on its face was a problem. And I think the system saw that, in addition to the pressure from the lawsuit, obviously, because the lawsuit said, hey, you're using this instrument that is discriminatory as the basis of admissions, and you can't do that. And so this was the result of both the lawsuit and internal studies in the UC system, principally by their researcher, their head researcher, a man named Saul Geiser, who basically had at his fingertips all of the data of the UC system and his study, which, by the way, has not been trotted out in the New York Times the way the Opportunity Insights study has been trotted
out. And
we
need to talk about that. So here you have a situation now where the University of California system, with all of its campuses up and down, you know, the most populous state in the nation, have said they will permanently forego SAT requirements. This is huge.
And it's not just test optional, it's test free.
Exactly. They will permanently forego it. Yeah. You don't submit it even if you've taken it as part of your admissions, which is huge. And thousands, as your organization points out, thousands of schools remain either test free or test optional in addition to that. But you have this core group of elite Ivy League schools that are saying they're going to go back to requiring SAT requirements. And a big part of that was not only a study by Opportunity Insights, this research institution that claimed that actually that was a good correlation, but also an article by David Lenhard, the New York Times education reporter. Let's talk about these two. Tell me what these two studies/reports said and why they were taken seriously by just a sliver of elite institutions.
Well, they're taken seriously because it's on the front page of the New York Times, and it's a study published by under the guise of Harvard. So immediately that lends it gravitas, whether it's accurate or not. I don't know that I want to like pick apart everything about the study or the article. Clearly, this was a campaign to change the zeitgeist that had been shifting very heavily against standardized tests for use for admissions purposes. And there was obviously, there are folks who just think, hey, these are objective measures. I did well on this test. I'm a smart person. I'm in charge. Kids need to take this test to get in.
And I had to jump through hoops, therefore everyone else should.
Well, look, David Lenhart exists in his New York Times world and New York Times bubble. And I confess, I'm sitting here in Brooklyn, New York. You know, I live on a block with journalists and Times reporters and New Yorker writers and all that stuff. So the truth is that there is it feeds a kind of elitist mentality at that sliver of higher ed. And I think that the Opportunity Insights report, you know, the first part of the Opportunity Insights report that got publicized was the fact that at Ivy institutions, I forget the exact numbers, but essentially they skew dramatically towards the higher socioeconomic strata. So the top 1% of income earners, wealth, or the kids of those families occupy the same number of seats as the bottom 60%, or I'm not so sure that's exact, but I do know one thing, that the top 0.1% has the same number of seats in the Ivy Leagues as the bottom two quintiles, 40%. So say what you will, for the decades that they use the SAT, according to the Opportunity Insights study, the numbers were skewed against low-income kids and Black and Brown kids. That's a fact that Opportunity Insights, and they say, now why? Here's why. One, legacy admissions, right? If you are a legacy at Harvard and Dartmouth and Yale, you've got a serious leg up. And while they're going back to the SAT, the one thing that we know statistically has disparate impact, right? Did Raj Chetty stand on his soapbox and say we must get rid of legacy admissions?
He's the lead author of the Opportunity Insights study.
Yes. Yeah. David Deming, did John Friedman? I haven't heard them talk about that because, you know, that gets a little tetchy because the donors, they want to send their kids to Harvard and Dartmouth. And so frankly, Opportunity Insights speaks a little bit with forked tongue. There's legacy, then there's also the athletes. And I'm not talking about, you know, Division I basketball and football players. I'm talking about the sailors, the yachtsmen, the squash players,
The
all of those,
elite sportsmen,
all of those, the gentlemen's sport.
disproportionately white elites, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, I understand that like squash is played by more than just white people. But the point being that, the Opportunity Insights study also talked about athletes. Now, the third thing they talk about is extracurriculars and essays and stuff like that. So what they say is that the sort of the student score that gets ascribed, that if you're wealthy, you have a leg up because, you get your cello lessons from Yo-Yo Ma. You get to play contract bridge, which, is probably like some nice elite little niche. You get Garry Kasparov to give you your chess lessons via Zoom, whatever, right? They're obviously extracurricular. You do the New York Times journalism thing, and you go off to Costa Rica for a summer to do good work that your parents paid 10 grand for. So bottom line is, they said that is gives those, and of course you have the essay coaches and all that stuff. Now, there's an easy solution to that one, which is train the readers of the applications to basically say, okay, I have a kid who's working at the 7-Eleven from 4 to 8 every night, who has an A average at a mediocre public high school. And I have a kid who has all this other stuff, the sort of elite kind of extracurriculars, also has a good average at Dalton. How do I weigh those two things? What you have to do is be able to weigh the working at the 7-Eleven in the same breath as the
Right.
Yo-Yo Ma cello lessons, right? But here's the thing, that can be done. What you can't do is change the statistics and the underlying classism of the SAT. And so I think that, and so their rationale is, well, the SAT at least gives us something. The other thing they say is it lets us find the quote unquote diamonds in the rough, right? And
Diamonds
so
in the
this.
rough. So right, and this is a really interesting part of it. The backers of the SAT are claiming that it can actually help disadvantaged applicants. How?
Well, if you are now, let me give you a statistic. On the ACT, and I think it's either 20, probably 2022, not 2023, 2022. What percentage of Black students do you think got a 33 or above on the ACT, which is sort of for Harvard, that's kind of the score, right? What percentage?
No idea.
Guess.
I don't
Well,
know.
just guess a number. I'm just
I know. Okay, 50%.
0.3%.
Wow.
435 Black kids nationwide got a 33 or above on the ACT. Now, 1% of Latinos. The numbers for the SAT a little better. It's like 1%, 2%. Right? Where are these diamonds in the rough? Where are they? Comparatively, I understand there are some kids, right? And what Dartmouth says is, what Dartmouth said is, well, we found that kids who would have benefited from submitting their scores withheld them, right? What we were arguing, and what all the studies show, and what the University of California's data shows, is that the SAT and the ACT is a barrier. So for every one of these diamonds in the rough, you have a few hundred that aren't even going to apply to Dartmouth because they think their score is too low. Period. Right? So, and it's not to say that a kid who has a 1350, right, but has a 4.0 at their high school is going to fail at Dartmouth, right? Professor at University of Washington, Jake Vigdor, made a really good analogy. It's like, applying to the admissions process at Harvard, they're saying they need the SAT to find like the needle in the haystack. But you're not finding the needle in the haystack. You're finding needles among needles, right? Every kid, they have more qualified kids than they can handle, frankly. And so this is just a way of branding themselves as having some sort of elite objective measure. That really is, it's just a, I mean, it's just a crappy test.
So
And
finally,
just one line, and sort of drives a kind of education system below it that I think is doing a great disservice, not just to, poor and black and brown kids, but to all kids.
Essentially, this is a test that ensures that elitism is preserved, and that includes, basically preserving patriarchy and white supremacy,
Let me just add that
high income wealth
and the
supremacy, if you
men,
will.
the gender disparity on, that doesn't get talked about so much anymore because our colleges and universities are filled with talented women now. And women tend to do better on GPA in high school than men. And yet when you take the test, men do better than women on average. So, and every single study, one other point, like every single study before Opportunity Insights, GPA is the best measure of high school
Right.
GPA,
It's
how you're going to do in college,
not
right?
as though they have no measures besides the SAT. So let's talk about this. Does this trend of elite institutions resuming SAT requirements worry you, or are you, because the UC system has permanently dropped it and thousands remain test free, thousands of other universities and schools remain test free and test optional, does it give you some comfort? And where do you think the movement is to let go of the SAT right now?
Right. Well, it doesn't worry me yet. The problem is that, on that university, that faculty committees and donors have a lot of say on testing policies, even if admissions departments want to maintain test-free and test-optional policies. And even at UC, there was an internal fight there. And a lot of the professors at Berkeley and UCLA, who got their PhDs maybe at, Harvard, Yale, and Princeton, said, actually, we want the test because we have standards, and this is, and without this, we don't have an objective standard. So I do worry. I mean, Caltech flipping, I think, is an example of a change in faculty committee, and they turned on a dime. They weren't even test optional; they were test free. And they haven't talked about the three or four classes that they had coming in who didn't submit the test, whether those kids were any worse intellectually or academically than the ones before it. I think it's just strictly a kind of a reputation thing. And they see Opportunity Insights. Here's a Harvard study. Now we have something to hang our hat on, so we don't look like total classists and racists, because we have this argument that we need this to find the best and the brightest among the masses.
Give out a website, Harry, for your organization, Fair Test, where people can
Sure.
find out the studies that your organization has done, the reports you've put out.
Yes, it's fairtest.org, www.fairtest.org. And we invite all people to check out our stuff. We put out a report. It's called Why University Admissions Should Remain Test Optional, Test Free. It sort of discusses the Opportunity Insight report in the Times article and how they sort of hid a lot of balls. They cited studies that prove, David Leonhardt liked to cite studies that prove their point and not talk about all of the studies that showed that test optional actually works.
Selective research. Well, Harry, thank you so much for joining us, and good luck to you.
Thank you, Sonali. Thanks for having me.
My guest has been Harry Feder, Executive Director of Fair Test, the National Center for Fair and Open Testing. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, Senior Editor at Yes Media and host of Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Our audio podcast is on iTunes and Spotify.